I had so much fun visiting you back in July, but I only have one complaint.
Oh, what's that?
I came home 5 pounds heavier.
We did eat really, really well. And coming off a conference weekend, too.
Oh, my goodness. So the first thing you guys did was take me out to brunch at this amazing, amazing place where I had huevos rancheros that were just to die. I mean, who would have known I could have had huevos rancheros in North Carolina? I mean, this tells you how little I know about your amazing state.
We are kind of upscale here.
And then you guys treated me to Mediterranean. I have never seen so much baklava in my life. Like, yes. I sent a dozen pictures to my family and they disowned me. Like, they weren't speaking to me. That was some of the best Mediterranean food I've ever had.
It was really yummy.
The one thing we do have to talk about is the key lime pie. Because I made a confession when I got to your house that I had never had a key lime pie before. And I guess that was a problem.
Yeah. Well, it turned out to be a lie, too, wasn't it?
I'd had bad key lime pie.
So Sherry told me she didn't have key lime pie because she didn't want to hurt my feelings that she didn't like this version too.
That was the best stuff ever. I'm like, do they make that in California? Is that something importable? Can I like order it in a freezer box or something?
You probably can. It is Edward's key lime pie, not Amy's key lime pie.
That's right. I don't care whose key lime pie it is, as long as it becomes Sherry's key lime pie.
We ate a whole lot, but here's the real deal that Sherry's not sharing. Most of what we ate did not come from my kitchen because, see, I'm not really confident in the kitchen. Confidence is something we can build in our lives, though. And our episode today is about exercising our confidence muscle.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, good girls breaking bad rules.
Today, we're reflecting on what we learned from our conversation with Tricia Lott Williford, author of You Can Do This, Seizing the Confidence God Offers.
You know, listening to her tell the story of Mrs. Wretched, it made me angry all over again.
Oh, I teared up. I felt myself as the little girl. I felt myself as a teacher on Mrs. Wretched's team. Because I have had that teacher on my team. That was a hard story to hear, wasn't it?
It was. Well, and it made me realize almost everybody I know has a story like that from third or fourth grade. My husband had a teacher who actually put a refrigerator box around him to isolate him from the other students. And for my brother, it was a fourth grade teacher, and my parents almost pulled him out of the church school, which for them was would have been a huge move because they were so supportive of the local church school. So how about you? Do you have somebody who was like a Mrs. Wretched in your own life? Didn't have to be a teacher, but just basically someone who stole your confidence.
Yes. And I immediately knew who it was when you asked the question, even though it's a much smaller thing. I didn't have to endure it for a year or anything like that. But I love to sing. Now, let me clarify. I am not a soloist. I am the girl who sings in the choir. But at one time, I hoped to be the soloist. Uh-huh. In my church growing up, I did some singing and I actually did some duet kind of things with friends, including one friend whose mother had been an opera singer.
Oh.
So she was a real singer.
She was an expert.
And one day my friend shared with me that her mother had said that she dreaded it whenever she saw me get up to sing.
Sherry,
it crushed me. It crushed me and it shook my confidence to its core. I was a teenager at the time, to the point that even today, almost every time I sing, I think about that. I don't sing in front of people at all anymore, but if I stand up to sing in the congregation at church, I think about it. These things are so damaging, aren't they?
Okay, when I come visit, we need to do karaoke. I'm serious. I mean, I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I'm like a B flat. So, you know, we have to get...
Well, good. We'll sing loudly and with great joy.
Exactly. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord. It's biblical. That was horrible.
Well, okay. But here's the other aside. what possessed my friend to tell me? I have become very aware over the years. We've talked a lot about friendship lessons. Mm-hmm. I no longer trust people who seem to take some glee in passing on bad news to me. Because there's a motive there. Don't know what her motive was, but it couldn't have been good. So there you go.
That is very, very wise. Well, the person who stole my confidence was actually a boy.
Not surprising.
Of course. It was somebody I thought I was going to marry, actually. And we had met at a leadership conference, and we were sure God had brought us together. And it was a long-distance relationship, and he called every single morning. And then one morning, I just felt I couldn't talk with him that morning. And so I told my mom to just tell him I couldn't talk. And he broke up with me over that.
Wow.
And he later told me that when my mom told him I wouldn't talk to him, something broke inside that could never be repaired.
Oh, mercy.
And that the drama. Thing that slays me now is I was devastated that I had done that, that I could be such a ruiner, that I had the power with one innocent choice to be the one who ruined this amazing relationship that, you know, I thought God had put together. And it took me years to realize that in a real, true friendship, you can't make one mistake.
That's right.
That is the death blow. And that a person who actually cares about me believes the best, assumes the best, and actually wants to work things out and will tell me if they're upset and will dialogue and discourse. So I guess kind of like what you said, it's taken me time, but to realize that somebody who is that, I wouldn't have used the word drama, but it's a good word. Anybody who's that dramatic probably isn't particularly trustworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and he shifted all of the blame of the demise of the relationship onto you. The yes, these are the things we can look back and say, I learned a little lesson there.
Absolutely. Well, Tricia talked about her love of having dinner parties and made me want to ask if you could throw a dinner party with anybody, living or dead, who would you invite to your dinner party and why?
Well, first of all, let me just say anybody who accepts my invitation has a lot of fortitude because you never know what dinner is actually going to be like. But that's an aside, I guess. So who would I invite? I would invite people, and I try to do this now, to surround myself with people who energize me and encourage me. And that doesn't mean that they don't tell me the truth sometimes, because I'm not saying I'm looking for yes men or people to rubber stamp my life, but I want people around me who energize me and encourage me and challenge me, you know, push me forward. I love it. I was looking for a quote that I had heard, and the quote is, if you listen to all the praise of your fans, you'll think you're better than you are. And if you listen to all the criticism of your haters, you'll think you're worse than you are.
Good point.
And I love that. So I thought, I don't want to surround myself at my dinner table with fans or critics, really. I want to have those true friends. And I would invite Jesus to be at the table, too. You know, I know that's a Sunday school answer, but leaving an empty chair for him is the deal every time. How about you?
First of all, I was thinking of this on a completely literal sense. I was like, well, who would I invite? And I thought, well, I would invite Tricia because she seems to know how to throw dinner parties.
Tell it. I'd invite Tricia and ask her to bring dinner.
And then I got to thinking, you know, really, who would I enjoy? And I would love to actually invite some of my former students and just catch up with them. I was thinking specifically of my first few years of teaching. You know, they're 40. Because I was only 10 years older than they were.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it would be really fun to just catch up and listen and, you know, see what God's been doing in their life since then. And then I thought, I would also love to invite some of my favorite teachers. because mm-hmm. when I was in their class, they were one dimensional, you know, like they were only that teacher. They never went to the grocery store. They didn't have lives. They didn't pay taxes. It would be fun to be able to tell them, you know, the impact they had on my life, but then to just also learn about them and hear. So I'll tell you one thing I hear in common with our answers is probably there'd be a lot of listening.
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be a lot of brown nosing or a lot of criticism. There'd just be a lot of dialogue, a lot of give and take, and a lot of listening and learning, and probably that lingering thing we've talked about.
Oh, I love the idea of having teachers and students there. That's neat.
Yeah, made me realize I might need to actually do something about that. I also had kind of an aha moment when she was describing this whole situation of having trolls attacking her when she was doing some of her personal writing on a political site. And she described these as people with no life.
Mm-hmm.
And see if this makes any sense. In computer programming, there's zeros and ones. That's how mm-hmm. everything gets done. Zeros and ones. And you know that I like to say, lose who you're not, love who you are, live your one life well. And one of the problems we as women have is we think we can live multiple lives, we can be all things to all people, but really we have one life. And so I was thinking about what she said about these losers who have no life attacking us and how we shouldn't invite them to our table metaphorically. We shouldn't let them in our lives to speak into our hearts and speak into our souls. It occurred to me, we don't want to let someone who's basically a zero steal our one or turn our one life into a zero, you know, into kind of this nothingness. So that may be a little bit too nerdy, but it kind of stuck with me.
No, I love that. Well, and you and I have been talking about a professional project, but I think this is true of any kind of relationship. I had a professional person years ago in a group setting do a teaching, and he said, we need to remember that not all opinions are equal.
Yeah.
Now, that really flies in the face of our American mentality, which is all men are created equal. So then we kind of extrapolate and say, oh, well, everybody's opinion is equal. Well, it's really not. It's really not. And I've had to have that processing, and this goes back to Trisha's confidence, that I don't let one mean-spirited person steal my confidence. And can I just say, let me tell you a little, like a continuation of my earlier story. This person who criticized my singing, she might have been right about my singing. I'm not saying that, but she's a mean-hearted person. And she sent me a friend request on Facebook. This was a couple years ago. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay, sure. Yes. I mean, within days, she wrote the nastiest comment on something that I had posted about. She actually said, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, my word.
Yes. And I sat there and I thought, what in the world? And then I thought, I know exactly what to do. I am not a little girl anymore. She is not an authority in my world. I can say what she is. She is simply, she's a zero. She's a mean-spirited person. And guess what? I unfriended her and didn't think twice about it.
Good for you. Nothing had changed. You know, isn't there a saying that says when people tell you who they are, believe them the first time?
Yes. And it's really, really true. So, but in this case, I thought I am taking my own power
for you. Good for you.
Yep.
Wow. Because it's your page. She can write that stuff on her page.
Exactly. If she doesn't like it, she can unfriend me. Whatever. Whatever.
I love it. I love it. I appreciated Trisha's approach to the past because, as you know, I have a little bit of I have a big problem with people who say, well, you can't write the next chapter of your life if you're still busy reading the last one. And while I recognize that there's problems with staying too stuck in the past, I also think that there's problems with never, ever looking back at the past and always being so forward focused. And I was part of an online discussion this week that I really had to kind of back out of because it was in a group of people who made it sound like if you were totally forward facing, you were spiritually mature, and if you ever looked back to the past, then it was evidence that you were spiritually immature. And that hurt my feelings. Oh, wait, no, that makes me sound immature. But it just, it didn't ring true for me. It didn't ring true for the way God works in my life. And so I appreciated that she recognized that we need to heal the past. We need to tell the story of our past. And sometimes we need to do it over and over again in order to move forward.
I think it was Susie Eller one time said to me that we need to be visitors and students of our past, but not residents, which I love that because it's what you're saying. It's these forays into our past to understand ourselves, mm-hmm. to take a look at the wounds that mm-hmm. need to be healed still so that we can move forward.
For me, I'm sure it's different for each personality type and how God works with each individual. When I can look back and go, oh, I get it. And then it then impacts what's happening in the present and I can make wiser decisions for the future. I actually find that really, really exciting. And maybe some people just don't do that. Maybe for some people, it really is better to just to blaze forward. I don't know.
I would really question that because the other aspect is the quote, and I don't have it quite right, but that if we don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it. Yeah. And I think that's true in our personal lives as well as a political world and, you know, as far as the bigger picture of history. So, you know, one of the things that I think has been a common theme with Tricia and in our conversation, that confidence really is tied into the people that we hitch our wagons to a large
good
degree.
Point.
And Hebrews 10:35, I love it, says, so do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. And one of the ways that I have thrown away my confidence in the past is by allowing people in who either have this mantra like, don't look at your past, that seems destructive in our own life, or mm-hmm. that people that are actually mean-spirited towards me.
Mm, that makes total sense. And I love that verse. I don't think I've ever seen that verse before. For both the grit and the grace aspect of our time with Tricia, I think her definition of confidence can apply to both of those. She defines confidence this way. She says, confidence is the belief that there is a place for you. I thought that the grit aspect of this is that can be hard. It can be hard to just believe this for myself because it's so easy for us to expect that that sense of belonging or that sense that there's a place for us, that we wait for others to bestow that on us. Or we work hard and hustle to prove it, to prove that we really deserve a place. So I think for me, at least, that's kind of the grit aspect. How about you? What would you say is the grit aspect of all of this?
For me, the grit has been, I can draw some boundary lines. I can jettison some of these relationships. I mean, and these aren't people that are close to me. I'm not talking about, you know, shoving people out of the way. I'm just talking about I can cultivate some and let other ones die a natural death. And so that's taken grit for me because I really bought into this, that loving everyone meant letting everyone speak into my life for a long time.
That's a really important distinction. And I think for those of us who are recovering people pleasers and those of us who are HSPs, even thinking of hitting unfriend feels mean. And so I think you're right. It takes grit to set the boundary that says, no, this person doesn't have access. This person isn't invited to my dinner table.
Absolutely.
Well, and then when I was thinking about the grace, especially in terms of Tricia's definition of confidence, again, she says it's the belief that there is a place for you. And that phrase, there's a place for you, sounded so familiar. And I realized when Christ was leaving this earth, he said, I'm going to prepare a place for you. His last words were words that were all about confidence. There is a place for us, an eternal place for us. So that got me all excited. And then I started thinking about 1 Corinthians 12 that says that we're each a part of the body of Christ. And so not only is there a place for each one of us in the body, but biblically, no one of us is allowed to be that troll who says, you don't belong here. Nobody is allowed to reject us. We have confidence that there is a place for us because Christ has gone and he's preparing a place for us and because we are part of the body of Christ. That got me really excited.
Oh, girl, I'm going to soak that in for the rest of the day. I feel it. You know, I talk about that pressure in my chest. This was a lightness in my
good.
I, I feel everything right there, you know? So I'm going to take that one and rub it right in. That was really good. Hope the listeners feel that way too.
So you came up with a good, bad rule that goes along with this. A good, bad rule. Isn't that an oxymoron? Never mind. You came up with a bad rule for these episodes.
Which is confidence comes when others approve me.
And you know what? I recognize that as a bad rule.
Yes. Yes. But goodness knows I've lived by it some in my life. Yeah.
And then what's the fact we can focus on instead, the flip side?
Confidence comes when I reach out to others. I think about how that was illustrated so beautifully in Trisha's story, Project Smile, and even the way she ended with the dinner party. It's all about reaching out to others. And we think I'll reach out to others when I feel confident, but really we've got to flip it to I'm going to reach out to others and that will build my confidence.
Head over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode66.
You'll find links to this week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
We'd love to have you join our Facebook group, where we'll be doing a live question and answer later this week.
Be sure to join us next week when we'll be talking with Karen Eamon, author of Listen, Love, Repeat.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.
Yeah, and I believe that you have an incriminating photo.
I do. I have a photo of the day where we both had lunch all beautifully laid out, and next to my plate was a pile of grapes, and next to your plate was a half of Edward's key lime pie. So, I don't know. I'm thinking it seemed like Amy's key lime pie to me, or at least you thought it was.
That really seems right to me. I don't see the problem with that.